Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Linehan.
Well, if you're listening on the morning that it comes out, it is 9:18, September 18th, 2024. And we've got, this is episode 174, by the way, and it's a twofer today. This is an important date because there's a guy named Absalom Gleaves who is pretty prominent in this area back in the early 1800s. Why do I mention him? You're going to find out in the second half of this show. Two guests today, one phenomenal and the other, you know what? I'm going to tell you folks, I hate to do it about me, but that's why I brought Mark Allen Barnett in today, co-host. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Dave, how are you? You know, every time I get around you, my voice gets deeper. Have you noticed that?
I did notice that. It's your, you get on the radio voice.
It's my radio voice.
Yes.
It's good to be here, man. Thank
you. It's
good
to have you here, man. I've always enjoyed having you on the show. That last show that we did with Bob Bender.
That's right.
And yeah. Steve Creech. Oh, people God, are still talking about
it. It was really, really cool. And awesome. And we got different perspectives on the industry. You and I go a long ways back from the performing songwriting side, but to add the production side and to add the management side was kind of a really, really cool thing.
Pretty cool perspective. If you missed that one, go back and listen. And Mark's got a brand new CD, so why don't you come in and talk about it?
Sure.
Got some really cool songs on here. It's Mark Allen Barnett, the last damn CD
I'll ever do.
Volume 1. It's like, it's the farewell concert.
That's it. It's this farewell, 37.
37. We really mean it this time.
That's right. Take from Elvis and Elton and all this. Yeah, that's the name of it. While it is humorous, you know, I don't know how much physical product I'll do again, but as I'm finding out, I have to have things to remind myself. I sold out the first 100 in 1 week.
And
there are people who like to have a memento of shows. They like to have, you know, something to hold in their hand. And musicians and our buddy Bob mentioned this. He said, people make a big mistake by not having physical product, even though it's not as sold like it was, it's still good to have. So
really, almost like a calling card.
It is a calling card. Yeah. So. And in a place like Nashville, you know, people want to know what you do and they don't always want to immediately go to their phone or whatever, you know, but if you give them something they can look at and actually have, they think, oh, well, let's look this guy up, whether they play it or not. I also do the USB ports, you know, where it plugs into the computer. And I'm going into the streaming. I have fought streaming tooth and nail because we've, you know, it's decimated us in many things, but it again is the Nashville handshake. It is what we all do now.
Right.
And so this will very soon be on all the streaming platforms.
Very good. And the picture on the front, you and Gilly Dog.
Me and Gilly Dog. That's for the animal lovers and also for I don't want you to feel guilty if you don't buy it, but Gilly doesn't eat. You know, so
I saw that.
I use that. You know, it works for Sarah McLachlan. Right. You know, it's this, I remember the saddest commercials in the world with those poor little dogs.
And those commercials seem to be like 5 minutes long.
That's true.
You know, we'll be watching Patty goes, oh, please change it. I just can't take
it. Well, I'm always going, God, if if you're running very, very expensive commercial time, why can't you feed these animals?
Exactly right. Very, very good. So tell me about the CD, Mark. These are special songs, people you've been co-writing with and everything. Tell me about how it came.
Most everything that I've done for the past 24 years now have been teaching lessons with a practical application effect. And people come to do my songwriter tours, which you wonderfully advertised for me. And people like our South African friend came to it. And
John Casey, who is now going by John. Hi, John.
Oh, that's good.
And he listens all the time.
Well, there you go, mate. You know, but I have been working with people and I've written since 2003, over 3,000 songs. And I've recorded a lot of them, with Jay, about 1800 with Jay Vern from Jay's Place. And
we had Jay a while back too. If you want to look at
that's right.
That was a very good show.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway.
And so I had, I was going to go, okay, if I could boil this down to the sides of me over the last like 3 years, and I did go back with a few songs that I've had in limited release before. I've had seven CDs, but it's always been to promote the teaching aspect because that's my primary thing. And I'm not the young kid artist anymore, but I am an artist when it's promoting this. So I wanted to find a nice little cross section, and I wanted to do a couple of songs with Frankie Ballard, who we've talked about before, who was
another great left-handed guitar player.
That's right. And Frankie, it went on to Warner Brothers, and some of the songs that we wrote with Walt Aldridge and you know, writing with a hit writer, which is kind of what I do. I help bring people into these various situations. And so I wanted a couple from Frankie. Then this interesting situation on something we're going to play is a big gospel thing. Mm-hmm. I come from a gospel background. My dad was a gospel quartet singer, and I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church. My grandfather is a fire and brimstone preacher. And so there's a side of that. Then there are the songs over the last few years that are more introspective. You and I recently, we've lost several friends of ours, and so I wanted to feature some of the songs. I've got a lot of these songs, but these are what I feel are very, very important. And my friend Mark Monroe, who also was on a
great guy
thing, and a few things that we wrote.
Love you, Mark.
We wrote one, Ordinary Extraordinaries, that was
a special song, a
thing Jimbo Henson used to say, and so we've kind of written it with him in mind. It's kind of reaching beyond the grave, and then. I've got a Ray Charles edged thing, which is kind of part of me, called Red Hot Passion. And then one that I hope we'll play today that you found the idea, which is you and I put this thing together, and I'm very proud of it because I know that you're still here, and it's just an amazing story, an amazing twist. Wow. And then I did go in and on a few things, on four songs, I kind of remixed and redid, added some things too. So there's some songs that have been around for a little while, and then most of it, eight songs are very new. It's 12 songs.
I also love that your signature ending song is on here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Tables and Chairs.
We pumped the strings. We did a remix on it. We had some string parts. Guy Jonathan Yudkin, who was the Fiddle Player of the Year for 3 years in a row, the CMA Fiddle of the Play, and he's a magnificent player. Plays cello and viola and violin. And he had done a string section, and earlier we didn't emphasize it enough. And so we went back, we remixed that, we made it fresh. We took a couple of the other songs, put some vocals up on them, put some parts that I had not had on them. I got some sax. I got a horn section just on this one school of her from a real R&B soulful thing from Mark Monroe, and got a big horn section on. So it's so cool. All of Mab. Go have all of Mab. So I'm very proud of it. Yeah. And if that's the last one, if there is no volume two.
Oh.
And if I don't get a lot of sales on volume one. No, but that could be the last physical. But I say that kind of laughingly. And we made the little joke, Eagles, you know, they had 14 years of farewell tours. And
they sure did, didn't they?
You know, as a performer. Still going on. Well, as a performer, you live your life struggling to try and find your audience. And if you find your audience, that audience often expands. You know, it's kind of an itch. You know, I'll tell you who I went to see one time. I went to see Three Dog Night.
Yeah.
All right. I loved Three Dog Night. Yeah, they were so good. And they said, and they had this thing, and they said, how many people here grew up with us? You know, 60% of the audience raising. How many people are the children of people who grew up? A whole bunch of hands up. Then how many grandchildren? And then somebody held their baby up, you know? And so your audience expands, and whatever you do in life, songs are not about us. They're about the reactions and the emotions that we build with our fans and our listeners. And so I constantly get asked for songs, and so I will do whatever as long as there's a demand for whatever I do. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I've been kind of morphed into this teacher, mentor, and I'm writing with other people for their project. So it's shared with other people through other people, you know, these younger artists, sometimes older artists, but that's your force multiplier. And I didn't ever, even when I moved here, I'll tell you what, it's an interesting thing that I never moved here for the fame and glory. A lot of people will say, well, I didn't move to be rich or famous. You picked the right business for it. But I have never met a number one or top writer, hit writer, who said, I moved here to become famous, get my sunset. They all came here because they had reached the end of the line where they were. You're like that. Yeah. You had been in Cincinnati. You did a lot of things. You got to a certain age where it was, I want to be in a different place. Am I correct there?
Right on.
And that's the same thing. We moved to Nashville because there are people like us. And so we get around a community of people like us.
And it happens quickly.
It does. And my emphasis, and why I love your show, and I love what you do, and how you've approached what you do, is because it shows the personal aspect of this town. This town is not just about songs and songwriters and music and the music business. It's mm-hmm. about the community.
It is.
Of songwriters, the community of artisans and creators.
Fellowship.
Yeah. You meet your friends for life.
You do.
You know?
Yeah.
And we also know, and I know you know this too, we have people that come in and you meet them, you hang around for a few days, you see on Writer's Nights, whatever. Then you don't see them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You run into them again, and it's just like you were talking to them yesterday.
Yeah.
And so there are many people that make you remember Julie Morva, my friend Julie.
Julie, who had
a good career. She doesn't come down here as much anymore. When she does, she is promoting her daughter Haley. But Haley has morphed from trying to be an artist. She's now working for a publicity firm.
Wow.
And she is getting Tina and I to go to the red carpet for the new Reagan movie.
Uh-huh.
She's working with Dennis Quaid.
How about that?
And so we're going to go and hang out with the celebrities.
Is Quaid going to play?
Yeah, it's in Reagan. He's in Reagan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's out in September, but they're doing all the promos right now. So
that is awesome.
So our careers take these strange little turns, and we still write, we still perform, we still have that, but we morph into different things.
Yeah, I agree.
I never thought I was going to be a teacher of this stuff.
Mm.
People came to me.
Yeah.
And because of that, I meet people like you.
Mm.
And that is, and then there is no telling, you know, we always talk about to our teachers and we say, do you realize how many lives you touched over the years? And that's kind of how it feels. You know, you touch a lot of lives. That's
really
what we do with music.
Well, let's play one of these songs from this
Please do.
Record. How about that gospel one?
Okay. This is one of my more fun Only in Nashville stories.
Uh-huh.
The song tells it all, but I literally was going one day to Walmart, 8 o'clock in the morning. And you know, those big displays they have in the middle of the thing and you can't see over them. Well, I heard this girl's voice scatting.
Oh,
and she so I just started and I hear this quiet these two little voices talking and they stick around. She sticks her head around and she's oh my God, what are you doing? Turned out she was a woman, a comedian who was filming a TikTok video in Walmart that morning. And she's walking up and down the things and a friend of hers is filming. So we did just a little snippet for a minute and then I walked on. And you know how you feel somebody looking at you, you know?
Yeah.
And, well, I felt someone. I looked, and it was this elderly black man, very distinguished looking, with a Walmart vest on, waved me over. He says, son, you was doing some mighty fine tones. Well, thank you. He said, are you professional? I said, well, I think so. I've been doing about 50 years. He said, well, would you be interested in singing in a church?
Mm.
I said, well, yeah, I've done that. I grew up in the church. He said, because I'm the bishop in the AME church over here in Green Hills. I'd like your business card. So I gave it to him. And I had to go home. I said, well, if I'm going to play in a church, I got to write a song for church. And this is my gospel side. And I got the power, got the love.
All right, let's spin it, man. Let's see it. There it is right here at Jay Vern Studio.
Jay Vern Studio.
Listen to the instrumentation of this. This is awesome.
My neighborhood Walmart, when the strangest thing happened to me. I heard this angel's voice singing in the cereal aisle in some tones I could not believe. I had to go over, add some notes of my own. Before you knew it, we were sharing them old gospel songs. I could feel the Holy Spirit making that joyful noise.
I got the strength,
I got the spirit of the Lord.
Plate.
If I start talking in tongues, you'll forgive me.
Oh, yeah! Woo! All right.
I'll tell you what. And now you don't have to go to church Sunday.
There you go. You take
went
it with you.
Right here on the podcast today. Mark, that's awesome, man.
Thank you.
I heard your radio voice in there.
Going, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a character Jay and I refer to as Bass Boy. Bass Boy always goes at the very end. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
It is a funny. But I'm really, it's just a cool thing. I'm so glad.
Now, who are the background? I mean, you had like a whole choir behind you.
Yes. Hand me that CD that you had there.
Yep. Right. Here it is, right?
Because I have these, they are two singers. It's Gail Booker and Brenda Hickman. And Jay, our good friend Jay, is the music director for a church. He's music director for two churches. And he is there in his choir. And they came. And it's the two of them and me.
Wow.
And we just stack a lot of things on that. And they are so sweet. They're two young women. They're just funny. But they never know what they're getting into. You know, I don't – what are we doing here? I'm like, trust me. But they are very, very sweet, and they're very good, and I've used them. They're all over this particular project.
What a great song. You know, there's another one on the CD that I wanted to talk about real quick. We won't play it. We don't have time. But yeah. Bamatized.
Yes.
Which is also what a great idea for a song. Because you're from Alabama.
I am from Alabama.
So we could say Roll Tide.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Certainly. Gary Kavanaugh, who we all know, had this title, and he brought it to me. And at first, I didn't want to write it because I thought I'd seen it on a T-shirt when I was in Gulf Shores, like when I was like 14 years old.
You do the Frank Brown every year.
Every year. Yeah. And so I kind of was hesitant to jump in. I said, that's got to have been done, you know, but we ended up writing it, and I made it a kind of a love letter to my state, which it's all about the state, and you've been Bamatized and Roll Tide and War Eagle. And,
it's so cool.
And I'll tell you the other thing on that, I did a video, and
the video is out there, and it's awesome. You did that at Gulf Shores, too.
It did at the Frank Brown Festival. Uh-huh. And in that, I've got a line, you know, if you've ever seen War Eagle or yelled out Roll Damn Tide, you know. Uh-huh. And in it, when I do that line, I'm wearing an Alabama jersey. And then one of my really good friends, Joe Gilchrist, was in an Auburn jersey. And he said, you know, he said the War Eagle. Well, he died right after that.
No.
So we got him on. He was the owner of the Floribama and the founder of the Frank Brown Festival.
Heard so much about him.
Yeah. And so, again, all of this stuff goes into your life experience. This is what I write. I write life experience, either mine or, as we both have discovered, other people's. But, you know, it's three chords in the truth, and that's what I try to do. And that's what I think I've done.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. You know, you talk about other people's lives. I was reading a story on the internet a while back,
and it touched me so deeply. One of the things I've learned from you is from being you being my Yoda.
And a lot of people's Yoda.
Right? You will.
You look at a song from a lot of different angles and find out how you can twist it. Yeah. Maybe twist it positive. Twist it to in a way that nobody's ever thought of before. And I think that's, you put that perspective on things.
Yeah.
Like you said, Jimbo used to say, it's the extraordinary or ordinary.
Ordinary extraordinaries.
Yeah. Right? So I saw this and I'm reading this article and it just touched me so deeply. And I thought, oh my God, this song, this would make a great song because it's a twist already.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a twist that nobody would ever believe, but it was a true story.
You can't make this up.
You can't make it up. And I tried in my limited capability, but I threw the idea past you, and you thought of me, you know what, I'd like to try that. And you did a hell of a job. You
Thank
put
you.
This together. So tell us a little bit about I know you're still there.
Well, you find great ideas. It's a thing about you, and even in your music, and I hear it.
Oh, go on.
It's the truth. What we're all looking for, there are two reactions that we're trying to get from our listeners, and that is, oh, my God, that's my life, or that, oh, my God, that's my life, and I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
And so when you approach something like death that is so final and everyone's have to deal with, you can look at it in one of two ways. You can go ahead and state the obvious, and, oh, it's so depressing. Or you can find a way to make it hopeful or at least feel better. And that story was about a woman whose father died, and she starts texting to his number.
Yeah.
And it made her feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes through just starting to do this. And we all do this now. We all put our everything of our lives on our phone.
Yeah.
All the pictures, all the things we eat, all of this stuff. And she did that. And she did her graduation. She did her
wedding,
wedding and heartbreak. She got all of that kind of stuff. And she just put this and put notes like she was writing to her dad. And have you ever seen anybody, you can see this from time to time. Feel bad. We're going to talk about cemeteries. Somebody sitting in a cemetery and they're kind of, you kind of overhear them. They're talking to the person who's,
we do it all the time. Who's,
yeah. And so we do that. I do that. I go up and I'll go visit my mother's cemeteries, factor in a lot. But you know, you talk to them like they're still here. And there's a piece of them that is still here.
Yeah.
And that's what jumped out at me when you gave me that. You showed me that idea and kind of gave me the background. I'm like, this woman felt like he was still there. And then the twist on the song is what happens at the end.
Well, let's play it. Then you can hear the twist. No, You're Still Here. It's from the new Mark Allen Barnett album, which is out there, by the way, on your webpage.
Webpage, musicchooseyou.com.
Check it out.
Dave Lanahan's a writer on this.
Well, she gave you an idea. It's part of it. It's a great song. Listen to it. Watch for the twist. It'll blow you away. And it's a true story. Here on the Songwriter Connection podcast.
Tears fell on her screen as she looked down at her phone. Headed home from the funeral, knew he was really gone. When a young girl loses daddy, leaves a hole that can't be filled. So she did the only thing that might keep her close to him. She didn't know why she did what she did next. Trembling fingers had minds of their own as she typed out this text. I know that you're still here. I can feel you all around. I still see your smile. It warms my soul right now. You help me to go on. You'll never disappear, no matter where I go. I know that you're still here. Years flew by from time to time. She sent another note. First date, first car, first time she felt her heart was really broken. Pictures of her graduation, she got her degree. The night that young man finally got down on one knee. Though she never got an answer, it still brought some peace to put thoughts into words.
gave her a relief. I know that you're still here. I can feel you all around. I can see your smile. It warms my soul right now. You help me to go on. You never disappear, no matter where I go. I know that you're still here. 2 days after she gave birth to their brand new little boy, the lights were off when her phone went up so bright. He said, I'm not your dad. I've had this number all this time, and your messages have gotten me through since my daughter died. And I tell her every night, I know that you're still here. I feel you all around. I still see your smile. It warms my soul right now. Help me to go on. You'll never disappear, no matter where I go. I know that you're still here. Know that you're still here.
Our guest on the Songwriter Connection podcast, the guy who says, you don't choose music, music chooses you, Mark Allen Barnett. What a great song, man.
Thank you. Yeah.
There's so many things I want to talk about that song, the lesson behind the song. A lot of people think, well, there's three parts to the song. There's the verse, the chorus, and there's the bridge. Mm-hmm. And there, so I need a bridge, mm-hmm. right? You don't always need a bridge.
No.
But what I love how when you, and this bridge is where you put the twist in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. It just, when I watch you play this song out, the crowd goes, ah. You could just hear the gasp, when it hits them, and they're all reaching for their Kleenexes.
Especially, oh my gosh! Especially when so many friends have passed away, and you want to,
oh man,
feel that. And
it's happening too much.
It's happening too much, yeah. And it's just one of those things. You just go thank you, Lord. Thank you for that, and thank you to you for the idea. It's really hard to find ideas that have that unique thing, and then to find a way to put them in. And the bridge to me is always what I consider the lawyer's final summation. There, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this is my closing
thing. Every time I do a song, right? I bring that up.
That's what it is. What piece of information? Another thing that you have to do on a bridge is you have to find a different chord to go through. Mm-hmm. You have to find something different. The human ear,
something there, you know?
Yeah. The human ear listens to things, but it gets bored very easily because we got the same thing coming in us. And I hear a lot of writers that just kind of got the same chord pattern all the way through the song. And you've got to find some things. It's like if you've ever had sushi, you know, the little ginger that cleanses the palate for the next bite. Well, that's what you should do throughout the song. And mm-hmm. that's what the bridge does. The bridge is this musical thing, and it has a piece of information that you didn't see before. And I think we found a nice piece of information.
You know, there. And the other lesson in the song is, and I've said this before, many times for me, I'm a melody guy. The melody will grab me first.
Right, right.
Or a riff or something like that. And then the lyrics blow me away.
Yeah.
You know, seal the deal. Mm-hmm. And for you, you have that beautiful little riff in there that I heard you play on guitar. And then Jay put it to piano.
Trying to play it on guitar. It's one of those things that, and everybody does this. You have something in your mind, but it's hard to play. It's a real hard guitar. It's in the key of D. And that little note, it's a B string. And you have to manipulate it and move your hand. It's really a piano riff. And I heard it as a piano riff. And Jay does a great, great job. Playing it live, I still am not as smooth on it as I want to be. But I will be. It's just something that takes time.
Absolutely. Amazing. Thank you so much.
You.
Learned so much from you over the years.
Oh, thank you.
And I try to pass it on. A young artist yesterday who I think is so talented, Darren Dees. I'll say his name is Dees.
Oh, I know Darren. He's sure.
Darren, what a great voice.
Yeah.
And he was talking about songwriting. And I said, you know, here's the idea. And I got this. I felt like I was you. I said, you know, you've got to have that contrast between the verse and the chorus. And tell me if this sounds familiar. I go, Darren, here's what you need. You got your verse, and then you make that chorus soar. So here's the idea. Or the audience hears it the first time. Yeah. Second time it comes around, they know it. They start to sing. The third time, you got them because they're ready and they're singing along with you.
Yeah.
And you go, wow,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's great,
Alan Barnett.
And that is so cool that you told Darren. I worked with Darren and listed some of his songs, and that was one of the things I was saying. You really got to soar those choruses. And so the fact that you've reinforced that, and he's doing a lot around town.
I see him everywhere. Yeah. Love his voice. We're going to write. We're writing. I'm setting it up. So
got it.
Maybe you can join us.
Absolutely.
Before we take a break here, real quick, how to find out more about the tours that you do.
Okay. Everything that I do is on www.musicchoosesyou. That takes you to my website. My songwriter tours are a one-day or a multi-day kind of private workshop. People come in. I listen to their songs. Sometimes we write stuff. Sometimes people want to focus on different things. Some people that have 30 songs and nobody will listen to them. Okay, I'll listen maybe not to 30, but I'll listen to a lot. That takes time, and I go line by line and note by note. Some people want to get on a writer's night and perform, and so I help them tighten their performance thing. Sometimes we write stuff, and then usually the tour is during the day, but I'll try to help them get booked onto a writer's night, or I'll take them around.
You did that for us, too.
That's what we all do. We pass it on.
It's just awesome. And John Casey from South Africa, when he came and visited, he's a big fan of this show.
Oh,
he doesn't miss it. And you had asked him, is there anybody you'd like to meet that I can introduce? He goes, well, I heard Danny Wells on the podcast.
And I'm a friend with Danny Wells. And
we'll have lunch with him.
Yeah, have lunch with him, yeah.
Yeah.
Usually, if they can give me something within reason. I will tell you a funny one. I had a girl from Chicago, and we're at the old Nashville.
Yeah,
and she said, well, do stars come out anytime on this? And I said, well, not really. They're usually on the bus. Their stars in this town are songwriters. But would you like to meet one? And she said, yeah. Sitting right next to us on the other side was Weird Al Yankovic. I said, hey, Weird Al, this is Kimberly.
Are you kidding me? Unbelievable.
So, it's a funny thing. But that's the tour.
You never know who you're going to run into.
That's exactly right.
You never do. Yeah. I get so many crazy stories like that. Well, we got to take a little break, and then we're going to change channels on you.
All right.
We're going to find out who this script. Absalom Gleaves is.
Looking forward to
talking about him here in Nashville.
All right.
Don't go away.
All right.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now, during our Veterans Day sale, save 40% on the Sleep Number Special Edition smart bed. Limited time. To find a store near you, visit sleepnumber.com.
Listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com. Now back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
And Mark Allen
Barnett.
If you're listening on YouTube, as I always say, it's not a video podcast, but we do put it on YouTube. You got to be there. Like and subscribe because it really helps us. And now we're over 1 million worldwide streams.
Holy cow,
working on our second million. Unbelievable. Wow. It's all thanks to you.
That's great.
I'm truly humbled. I really am.
Yeah.
Well.
All right, Dave. Let's go with this. You have done something that I am infatuated with because I have participated in something very similar. One of my neighbors, Furman York, who passed away last year, he was a hunter and he wandered. I live in West Nashville and he lived right across the street. And one day he goes, I want you to come look at something with me. And so we go and three blocks down from our house were these two houses and he takes me back in the woods. I think he's showing me some deer spot or something. And he takes me and we go through this woods everywhere in a little wall that's kind of halfway falling down. And we stepped over it and he showed me there's these gravestones in this thing, grown up, everything grown around. It was the Davidson family from Davidson County.
Davidson County.
And so he organized our little neighborhood to come in and clean it up and cut brush and carry it out and clean it. It was in a woods area, so it kind of grew back fast, and we weren't able to keep up with it.
It does.
You my friend, have done something and taken it to the next level in that you found something in your neighborhood in a cemetery. And would you please enlighten all of us, Dave Linehan?
It's the craziest story. I still can't think, you know, I call it Dave's rabbit hole. Right. And when people ask me about it, we say, how deep do you want to go?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it's boring to a lot of people, but to me, there was just something about it. Mm-hmm. First of all, in Nashville, you have to understand, we have this urban sprawl situation. I'm not going to call it a problem, but I mean, everywhere you go, they're building. I always tell people that our state bird is the crane.
Crane. That's exactly right.
Because in any direction downtown, you can count 12 cranes.
Yeah.
And it's the same in the suburbs. And I live in a suburb called Hermitage, Tennessee. Hermitage is named after
Andy Jackson.
Andrew Jackson's place was called Hermitage. So it's just a couple miles up the road. And I just figured all these subdivisions going in, I just always assumed was owned by Colonel Jackson, President Jackson.
Yeah.
And on the corner of Central Pike and Tulip Grove, near where I live, was this beautiful wooded area. Mm-hmm. It was gorgeous woods. And they tore it down, cut it down, and there was hills, as a matter of fact, you couldn't even see, and they built this whole big subdivision in there. These are homes. So one day, I'm taking my walk, and I'm going to walk up there and see what's going on, and I see this beautiful scenery up there. You look down and almost see the dam from Stoner's Creek and everything, but I walk back down, and then there's one empty field between the Beezer homes and Walgreens, which is on the corner of Central Pike in Old Hickory. Yep. And by the way, Central Pike is getting so busy these days. Yeah. As people are coming up from Mount Juliet. I could walk to 40 quicker than drive some morning.
Yeah.
So that's what we're dealing with.
Right.
So I cut through this field to avoid the traffic. And at the back of this field, there is a sign that says Absalom Gleaves Cemetery. And it's a beat-up sign. It's all bent. Mm-hmm. There's woods all behind it, backing up to the Burning Tree Apartments.
Okay.
And it looks, and it's, there's been mud thrown at it and everything, and it looks like it could be pointing somewhere. I thought, wow, it's a cemetery somewhere around here. And every day I'd walk by that, you know, and I tried, the name didn't mean anything to me. I'd never heard the name Absalom before.
Right.
It's
a biblical name.
It's a biblical name. So one day, I'm trying to remember the name. I'm like, Absalom, is it two families? Is it an Absalom family, Greaves family? What's going on? I'm walking, I'm trying to remember. By the time I get home, I forgot. Squirrel. Mm-hmm. a couple days later, I went up there again, and I just took a picture of it. And I said, okay. And I came back home, and I Googled it. The first thing comes up is Absalom in the Black.
Right, right.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. But I also found out that Absalom Greaves was a true guy. And there was a Greaves family webpage, and I got on it. There were a few Gleaves cemeteries around, and this one had kind of been forgotten. And I'm looking at the website, and it's telling me that there are graves. There are four graves, Absalom Gleaves and his wife, and somebody named Aunt Nancy, and somebody named Mary Wolford. And I go, wow, but where is this thing? And so I was taking a walk in October. Leaves are starting to fall. And I thought, wait, I'm going back up there. And I walked up, and I could see this obelisk pointing through the trees because now the leaves are falling.
Right.
And I go, what? The cemetery's here. So I just like made my way back. Wish I had a machete, you know. And I found this thing about 14 foot tall. On the side it said, Absalom Gleaves buried here, 1834, September 18th, 1834.
Lord. Wow.
And I went, wow, this is antebellum.
Yeah.
And on the other side of that said Catherine, his wife, who died in 1866. So she lived through the Civil War.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so now I went back home and I went, wow, this is incredible. And I found an email address on that Leaves family, Paula. And I emailed her. I said, Paula, my name's Dave Lennon. This is crazy, but I found Absalom Gleaves Cemetery. And I just want to know more about it. And I feel it on my heart to clear this out. And she says, well, in an email back, call this guy. He's waiting for your call. His name is Owen Gleaves. Owen is 84 years old. And he lives in Mount Juliet.
Oh, wow.
And I called him, and he and I have become dear friends. He's just a great guy, greatest guy. He is the great, 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 great grandnephew of Absalom Gleaves. And he said, I used to mow and take care of that cemetery, but I'm 84 now.
Wow.
I really can't do it anymore. My health is kind of
feeling,
but I think it's fired him up because he's come and helped me too.
Yeah.
So that night, the next day, actually, I went back 1834 style, true. I took a saw. and some pruning shears, and I just started cutting honeysuckle that was up over my
head. Yes, right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Little trees, you know, and I'd saw them down. And I cleared all around the sign. I cleaned that sign off and bent it back as best I could. I finally got everything around Absalom and his wife, and I started stepping on these stones. Mm-hmm. And I looked down and I go, what the heck is it? There were field stones. Right. There were other graves there.
Yeah.
So in talking to Owen, he said, you know, if you can make it back, there's an old oak tree back there. And it's big. It's 270 years old. We had an arborist check it out.
Wow.
If you can make it back there, that's where Mary Wolford is buried. So that was my first thing. The first swath I cut was back to the oak tree, and there she was. You know, beautiful stone. We don't know her connection to the family. I haven't been able to find that out. Now, the rest of it, we just kept, as we're clearing, finding more and more stones. Mm-hmm. Loretta Fullerton, Loretta Jean, she goes by. She came out one day. She was helping me. And, you know, we had a tornado here, so a lot of leaves and trees, a lot of trees are down. And this one big hollow tree had fallen down, and it was up against another tree and branches all around. And Loretta's digging around, and she goes, you know, Dave, I think there's a stone underneath that tree right there. So I go over there, and all I can do is reach my phone in. Mm-hmm. I clicked it, and I pulled it back, and I said, Loretta, you found Aunt Nancy. Aunt Nancy's McCullough's grave.
Wow.
And it was another beautiful stone. They think, from what I've been reading and the research that I found, that she was a servant that worked for the family.
Okay.
She died in 1905. Oh, wow. The third day I'm out there working on the cemetery clearing, these two gentlemen approach me and they go, what are you doing?
Yeah. Right.
I go, what are you doing? He goes, well, we bought this property and we're going to build a big plaza here. And I said, well, I've got permission from the family to work at the cemetery, clear it up. And he goes, well, we don't know the laws here. We're from Egypt. And if you can help us figure a way to move this cemetery, because it costs us a lot of money, we'll make it well worth your while. And I'm like, you know, I don't think I want to do that, sir.
Right.
I said, you know, this guy, it's going to be 190 years. He's been buried here. He owned all this property all around.
Mm-hmm.
So when I called Owen, he goes, no, we're not going to let that happen. We got the Historical Society out, and they've been out there now. We've marked all the graves. There's about 40 graves right there, and we think that there could be more. Uh-huh. We have to do a delineation, come out and figure out where all the bodies are and everything. Mm-hmm. But it just became an obsession. And then Owen came out, and he started joining me. We were cutting down trees. Joe Bozzelli came out one day, good songwriter, he's been on this podcast. Yeah. And we're cutting down trees and dragging them into the field, and just cleaning it up, and I'm just so proud of the work that we've done.
Certainly.
But as I'm working, Mark, all these couplets started running through my mind, and I had maybe 20 of them, all about this Absalom Gleaves. I've done all this research. I found that it wasn't Andrew Jackson that owned this property. It was the Gleaves family. There was Thomas, his oldest brother.
Right.
Thomas, we found out, his son married a daughter of Robertson, the ones that named Nashville.
Okay, right.
So it has some significant. And I found out that on his grave, Absalom's grave, it said Esquire. So I thought, is he a lawyer? What is he? He was a magistrate in this area.
Ah, okay.
And more on that when we get to song number two.
Okay.
So all these darn couplets are popping in. I know there's got to be a song, right?
Right.
Second day, Owen came out, pulled his truck into the field. Jumps out of the truck, does this little jig, and he goes, Absalom, Absalom, what you doing in that ground? I go, say that again.
Yeah, there you go.
I go, that is the line I've been looking for.
That's right.
To put all this stuff together. The next writing appointment I had was with Norm MacDonald, another cool guy.
Norm.
And he said, what are we going to write today? I go, well, I don't know if you want to do this, but you want to come down my rabbit hole?
Right.
He goes, all right. And I started telling him, I said, before we go any further, I'm going to take you to the cemetery, just about a mile and a half away.
Okay.
And we walked through that cemetery, and he goes, I'm in, let's do it. And he helped me I had all this mass of couplets and stuff, and he helped me put it all together. So this is the story, this song. Now, I'm really proud of this production. It is something different than I've ever done.
Sure.
I wanted a real Americana kind of folk, folky kind of storytelling song. I think Bob Dylan, Hurricane, you know, stuff like that's what I want. And I found a great producer, Cedric. Cedric Israel is amazing. He was like the engineer, the guy at the Ruckus Room until it recently closed here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. He put together a great band. There's a guy playing guitars, a couple of different guitars, a thing called a mandocello.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yep, his name is Landon. And then we brought Joe Spivey
from Time Cutters.
Did all the fiddle work on it. So it's something different than I've ever done, but here's the story of Absalom.
Right.
And thank you for indulging me.
Oh, absolutely. I wanted to find this out.
This is out there streaming everywhere. We put it up there yesterday. We have a video coming out that I'll tell you about that a little later. Let's listen to the song. Produced by Cedric Israel. It's just called Absalom.
Old Absalom, when the Tennessee sun was high, his name was on this old forgotten cemetery sign. Woods growing up behind it, and tall honeysuckle brush. I only walked on by it, but I wondered who he was. One day in late October, as the leaves began to fall, I saw this lone stone obelisk rising up above it all. I had to go back later with a saw and pruning shears, and I cut my way back to where he lay for 190 years. Absalom, oh Absalom, what you doing in that ground? Oh Absalom, who is this man I found? It? Wonder what took you down? That stone said he departed life in 1834. His wife was there beside him. She lived 32 years more. Catherine and Absalom, your story's still untold. And the more I cleared, the more I fell on down that rabbit hole. I found Mary Wolford underneath the old oak tree. Her connection to the family, still a mystery. I read Aunt Nancy's epitaph, loving wife and mother dear, and found 34 more unmarked graves of others buried there. Absalom, oh Absalom, what you doing in that ground? Oh Absalom, who is this man I found? And wonder what took me down. His family had his property from Wilson County to the Stones. And what you see that wasn't his brother Thomas owned. He joined up Creel's militia, learned how to give him hell. And then he fought with Colonel Jackson in the War of 1812. I can't help but ponder about the person that you were, a family man and farmer. At least that's what I heard. I found some of your letters to family and friends, but I wonder if I'll ever know just how your story ends. Absalom, oh Absalom, what you doing in that ground? Absalom, oh Absalom, who is this man I found? Wonder what took you down. Today as I make my way down a busy Central Pike, I see this perfect peaceful park up on the hill and on the right. It's crowded and surrounded by so much urban sprawl. This lone stone obelisk rises up above it all. Absalom, oh Absalom, what you doing in that ground? Absalom, oh Absalom, who is this man I found? Wonder what took you down. Absalom, oh Absalom, what you doing in that ground? Oh Absalom, who is this man I found? Wonder what took you down. Who is this?
precious man I found.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much.
Historical nonfiction music from that's great. It's a Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, man. That's an ode, and that's so cool that you got. It's very visual. You just follow the storyline. I've heard you do it a couple of times, but it's kind of hard to hear in some of the things. But I'm great. That's very, very good.
Thank you so much.
And a short chorus, man. Short chorus. Really, say what you can do.
Yeah.
Really great.
You know, it's Martin Buchanan, who's a documentary filmmaker, a real good friend of us. He came to town, stayed with me for 3 days, and brought all his camera equipment, flew a drone through the cemetery, and we shot this video that's just absolutely incredible. In fact, we got Owen to come over.
Okay.
And Owen does a little bit of, Absalom, what you doing in that ground? And we put it in the very beginning. He made it look like old-timey.
Oh, that's cool,
like,
man.
Like a scratchy record.
And yeah.
So it's really cool. I'm really excited. We'll have the video out probably by the end of this month.
Oh,
so,
that's great. That's
anime just for you to see it. So
me too.
It's streaming everywhere right now.
Wow. So, thank you. Congratulations. Very, very good. Very good.
So I couldn't figure what. There's so much mystery still involved.
Sure.
Well, I got to tell you this too. The third day I'm out there, the guy was telling me about moving the cemetery. He said, "Do you know there's a 150-year law here in Tennessee?" And I go, "No, what's that?" He goes, if it's the grave site's over 150 years, we can have it moved. And I went, I don't know if that's true. So I went home and I Googled it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what I found out?
What?
It is true. Okay. If it's been overgrown and not cared for.
Wow. And you fixed that.
And I go, dang. I always felt like this. I was getting.
Yeah.
I just had it on my heart and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Now I think I do. So between Owen and I and a bunch of good friends, we've been keeping this cemetery looking good.
You don't choose cemeteries. Cemeteries choose you. That's really good, and that's a great story. And preserving the past is so really important.
I think it is.
We are losing our past, and it's just very, very sad.
You know? People come and visit Nashville. They want to see Lower Broadway. They want to see Music Row, and I'm like, you really want to see Music Row?
Right.
Yeah, the historic Music Row.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty much gone.
It is.
And it's this little piece of land. It's 82 by 52. I'm like, that's not much to ask for.
Right.
Can we just make it a little park? And because this is an important guy, he deserves a nice place.
What has been the reaction from the guys who were trying to get you to move it? Have they?
You know what? They've now given us a new plan.
Okay.
They're going to build around it.
That's great. That's perfect.
Unless they decide to sell it, we have to deal with new owners. You never know.
Yeah, that's true. So, that's true. Well, that's great.
But here we go. That's we saw the plans and they shared it with us. And so I feel really, really, really good about it. Mm-hmm. But there's just so much mystery around this guy. There's only so much that I can find out.
Sure.
And I found out just about everything I can. I still don't know how he passed. I know he was a farmer and all that stuff is true. He fought with Colonel Jackson, War of 1812.
Uh-huh.
He was in Creole's militia. And you have to understand the 1830s. This was wild territory.
It was.
It really was. I mean, this was Indians owned a Native American land is what this was. And we were impeding on it.
Sure.
So many things have changed and I've learned so much from history and I'm just a history buff.
Yeah.
But the one thing I couldn't figure out, Mark, was Absalom. Absalom. On the cemetery sign, it's spelled just like the guy in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
On the stone, it's spelled different, a little different.
Okay.
And that was a puzzle. So one day I came home and I Googled Absalom. I know what David means, you know, King David, right? What does Absalom mean? And I found out that Absalom was the son of David and he raised an army and he was going to kill his dad. And he was a bad dude, a bad boy of the Bible. So I'm like, why would you name your son Absalom? Mm-hmm. And what I found out blew my mind. It means, the name Absalom means father of peace.
Wow.
And I chuckled and I went, Patty, guess what? Mm-hmm. Father of peace is what it means. And he was the justice of the peace in this area of Davidson County. He performed weddings.
Wow.
Disputes they bring to him. That's what he did. And so my next writing appointment was the lovely Jessica Nixon.
Right.
And I said, Jesse, I'm going to pull you down my rabbit hole. She goes, I got to write a song called Father of Peace.
Okay.
And in the era that we live in right now, there's so much in America today. There's so much division.
Yeah.
And we kind of, in the whole world, really, you think of what's happening in Israel and Gaza and in Ukraine. I mean, we just need a Father of Peace right now.
Right.
So we kind of rewrote this, and I loved the melody, and I'm going to play it for you, and you'll hear, if you listen carefully, background vocals are Jessica Nixon.
Okay.
So, here's Father of Peace. This will be the second release
in the whole Absalom project.
From Dave Linehan.
Do we need this righteous pride? Aren't we searching for the same light to shine? There's got to be some common ground. And all this talking just goes around and around. In circles going nowhere. We reach out and no one's there.
Okay, so you've also got yourself a new Hamilton, and so I am of the right age to play the old Absalom there in your new play.
Yeah, okay. When
good
we do
job,
this video,
man.
you're gonna play Father of Peace.
Very cool. Yeah. You know, my mother had a book called Absalom, Old Absalom, and I never read the book. I remember it sitting around, but when you said that, that's what I was remembering.
You know, Charles Jennett, a good friend, Charles Cox gave me a copy of that book.
Did he really?
So it's on my desk. It's next to read.
I want
to
see it before I leave.
I'll get it for you.
I'd like to see it because I remember that.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Oh, Absalom.
Very cool, man.
So, you know, it's like children, you know, you let your children out in the world in these, you never know what's going to happen,
right.
You know, so
right.
I'm kind of nervous about that. I hope people will like it. For me, it's different. It's a total Americana sound, and that's what I'm after. I'm hoping people like WMOT play it, and maybe some of the other, you know. And that song, the second one, Father of Peace, will be out in December sometime. And I don't know if we'll make a video on that. We'll see. But
that seems to be that the Father of Peace would be a great title for you know a set. Have you ever thought of doing a set when I just about this? Kind of would be kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, maybe would.
This is an NPR radio thing. So it's, hi, welcome back to Deep Tracks with Dave Lennon here for NPR.
NPR.
Fresh air.
Yes.
But it's great. It is a great historical thing. No. And there are multiple purposes for songs. And it's why I love for people to write reality, because you're expressing the emotions that we all go through, but in tangible form that people can see them. That is show, don't tell, and that's exactly what you've done.
Show me, don't tell me. If you take anything out of this episode,
that's exactly
today,
right.
That yeah. So many times in a writing session, I'll say, "What are you trying to say?"
Yeah,
and they'll go,
"Yeah."
I go, "Well, okay, now how do you say that
right.
without saying it?"
Exactly.
Show me. Show exactly me. Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And there's so many examples of that in songs
yeah.
today.
Yeah.
So think about it.
Yeah, yeah, man. Great job.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I appreciate it. I hope folks like it. And I never wanted this podcast to be about me.
No.
So it was with great hesitancy I wanted to do it. And I wanted to do it this way. And,
yeah.
And I thank you for cooperating.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I am very serious in the things that I, of course, first of all, take responsibility for everything, because everything good that happens to you is me. But
it is you.
But I have watched you, and I've known you for many years. And I knew you in Cincinnati, and you were a great contribution to the songwriting group up there. Greg Alpheimer, the late Tim Skeen, and all those guys, and just opened up a door for me getting to see and meet you guys and hang out. And then as I've seen you kind of grow, one of the things that we have to do is continue to grow and expand our scope in life. And this is the culmination of it. And why I wanted to participate in this show, because I believe you should be spotlighted. You do a lot for other people, you're unselfish, and so it is time that you get yourself a little bit of the
now spotlight. You're gonna make me cry, but
that's a job.
And you know, you don't know how much you meant to that group.
Wow.
You know, every Thursday we would meet these songwriters in Cincinnati, and I tell people, you know, find, even if you might not live in Nashville,
right,
but you can put together songwriter rounds.
Yes,
you can find a group of people with that kind of an interest. Is there an NSAI chapter in your town?
Right.
And do what we did. We found this little place called the Historic Claremont Inn.
There you go. Yeah.
And every Thursday night, we did a writer's round.
Yeah.
And we Greg bought this lamp. And he wanted to be like Douglas Corner.
That's right.
Bluebird kind of thing. And every Thursday, no matter what, we would be there, sitting around there and sharing the songs. And on the weekends that Mark would come down, he would always come down early on Thursday and join us on Thursday. You couldn't sleep the night before. We were so excited, you know.
Right.
And you brought some great artists down in writers to share with us, and it just blew up.
Well, there's an interesting thing that helps. It's almost, and I so try to get people who are interested in songwriting at all to form their own groups.
Please.
I think it's essential. One of the things that I watched from all of you is I kept coming back up, and
by the way, he wasn't just doing this in Cincinnati. He was doing it in Milwaukee. He was doing it in California.
Yeah.
Orange County, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And lots of other places.
There were three groups. There was Julie's group in Green Bay. There was Cliff and Bev's group in California, Orange County, California. And you guys, the three groups that I was up about every couple of months to each one. And I could watch the growth, and I could watch how you guys became more and more comfortable, and you interacted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you all just had a wonderful environment, and that whole, the historic in all of that. And that formed the taste of Claremont Festival, Songwriters Festival, and brought many of us. And suddenly you got Win Varble up there, and you got all these great
Dave Gibson, Kirk Phillips.
Yeah. And these guys were happy
Jeffrey Steele.
That's right. These guys were happy to sit in the room, in the round with you guys, because you played up to their level. And everybody I've ever known that talked about that, I remember going up there one time and just some of the writers, the hit writers, the big dog writers, and we're off in our little thing, and they're just saying, these guys are really pretty damn good, you know, and you guys were and are, and you've continued it on. I fully believe that when you moved to town, you had already done that groundwork. You already knew people when you got here.
Well, and that's a cool thing. Every time we come down, you say, oh, there's somebody else I got to introduce you to.
Yeah, right.
And so you would welcome us in, and then we'd go to these rounds.
Yeah.
And that's what you do. And you just meet more and more friends. Every time we left, Mark, you'd see the Batman building in the rearview mirror, and you felt, oh, man, I'm leaving I'm leaving. It felt like home. It was getting warm.
And it was. It was, yeah.
And eventually, I always tell people, be careful. It's going to draw you in. You're going to be here eventually.
That's right.
You know.
The other thing that I liked about that group, the Green Bay, the Orange County, and you guys, that we got a song plugger. We got some cuts. And it got everybody accustomed to writing for targets and to kind of, and it just tightens your stuff. Every one of those steps are what it culminates. It's almost like spring training and AAA baseball league and working your way up. That's what you have to do to get to the big dog levels. And that's what you guys have done.
And it could start real easy with a tour.
That's right.
Mark Allen Barnett tour. So check it out. Get to your website is again
musicchoosesyou.com.
That's right. Yeah. When Mark does that song, Tables and Chairs, he always ends his shows with that.
That's right.
People go nuts. Yeah. It's in the second verse. Yeah. That line comes out. You don't use
that's
music.
Right. Use
a G and people go berserk. So,
yeah.
Mark, love you, man. Appreciate
you too,
it, brother.
Thank you so much.
All you've done, you are just the epitome of it all, man.
You too, my friend.
Let me tell you. Catch you next time.
All right.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening, keep creating, and keep the melodies alive.